Hello everyone and welcome to the Wrestling Roundup. Once again, Matthew Roberts could not be here this week. He's asked me to send his apologies to both the listeners and to Brady Hicks himself for not being here again this week. Once again, I am Reese Turner and I will be recapping Raw and SmackDown this week. Thankfully, just the usual 2-hour show for each rather than a 3-hour Raw, 2-hour SmackDown. And 3-hour pay-per-view like last time, so hopefully it should be a bit shorter than the 1 hour 17 minutes I managed last time. This week's Raw was the Raw Roulette from Las Vegas, Nevada. And in my own honest opinion, I'm not going to go into too much detail about it this early on in the show. But it definitely had one of the best, most powerful and most incredible things on wrestling, at least in recent memory. But as I said, we'll get to more on that later. As I said, the Raw Roulette angle came from being... That Raw came... First day of my new tongue, as Taz would say. Raw came from Las Vegas this week, which was the main reason for the Raw Roulette. They quite often do this when... WWE quite often make a Raw Roulette when they're in Las Vegas. The official wheel spinner, I think you could call him, was Booker T. And to start the show was Shawn Michaels, who was a special guest this week on Raw. Not a guest host, not a guest GM, just a guest. The usual Shawn Michaels nicknames were used by the commentators. I obviously don't need to repeat them again. And a lot of times through this opening promo, it sounded like Shawn Michaels was actually seriously considering coming back to WWE full-time. Saying things like he tried his hardest to stay away, but he just couldn't. He even went on to repeat those nicknames himself. He mentioned how past Raw guests wanted to plug new things, but the last thing he was going to do was plug his new TV show, McMullen River Adventures, even though, he actually did it. But he was eventually interrupted by CM Punk with the new Nexus. Mason Ryan was not here this week as he was injured over the weekend, apparently. Commentators made mention of CM Punk having his last match at Money in the Bank on July 17th for the WWE Championship against John Cena, which Punk said he will win and take the title away. The content of this angle and a lot of the stuff that Punk's been saying outside the ring is incredibly similar to a lot of the work he was doing in his last days with Ring of Honor when he threatened to leave with the Ring of Honor title for WWE. CM Punk went on to mention how his leaving is a win-win situation for everyone, himself and the fans. And he said he's going out a winner, unlike Shawn Michaels, who lost his last match. CM Punk also said that one of the reasons he was leaving was due to people being more concerned with the past, people like Shawn Michaels, also probably people like Stone Cold, The Rock, Roddy Piper, who have been on Raw and WWE over the past few months. And he was annoyed with the people being more concerned with the past than the future, such as himself, and not getting down and begging him to stay as they should. That was Punk's words, not necessarily my views. I'm a big CM Punk fan, and I probably would agree with that, but I'm not going to say that here. See? I did a little Shawn Michaels curveball there. When they were talking about this being CM Punk's last match and Shawn Michaels losing his last match, there was a chance of one more match towards Shawn Michaels. Shawn Michaels says he is better than CM Punk, but CM Punk corrected him, said Shawn Michaels was the best, but now Punk is. CM Punk also said they're a lot alike, but Shawn Michaels said they're not, despite the fact that they both don't drink or smoke or anything, and CM Punk replied to that immediately with any more, alluding to the fact that Shawn Michaels is teetotal and he was once a heavy drunk. Well, I don't know if you'd say heavy, but he was definitely a bit of a wild child before he... left WWE for his sabbatical back in 1998, whereas CM Punk has been straight edge since day one. Shawn Michaels says, well, Punk, you have your style and I have mine, and then he super kicked David Otunga. The Raw GM came in and said that since CM Punk was already in the ring, he was going to have the first match of tonight's Raw. We went backstage to Booker T, who showed off some of the wheel's options, and then he spun the wheel. It landed on just a question mark. And Booker T revealed CM Punk's opponent to be Kane. Shawn Michaels also super kicked Michael McGillicuddy before Kane came up to the ring. I really didn't see the point in this match, especially at this point in the broadcast. I didn't understand why it was Kane, that Kane and CM Punk hadn't really done anything in a while. Like, in fact, that's like the very last thing I can remember CM Punk and Kane doing of any worthiness was back in 2009, just after WrestleMania, when CM Punk won the Money in the Bank. No, I think that was WrestleMania 28, actually, when CM Punk was threatening to seemed to be threatening to cash in on Kane's World Heavyweight title. ECW title, sorry. I might be wrong there, but that's the last I remember. There was mentions made of Kane and Mark Henry last week on Raw. As a match, it served no real purpose and had no real storyline to it. It featured little besides very loud CM Punk chants once more. It was a nothing match if ever there was one, and it ended basically with CM Punk walking out on the match for a count out loss, and as he was leaving he was saying, "What are they going to do, fire me?" Which is a very good point, actually, I suppose, in storyline terms. Sin Cara came out next for a match against Evan Bourne, and we were told that this was a match that was supposed to happen last week on Raw on the Power to the People broadcast, when WWE voters crashed the servers, and thus Mason Ryan was voted into the match rather than Evan Bourne. It shows that, if nothing else, that this voting system was actually quite legitimate, even if it was flawed as it was. But we went backstage then to Booker T to spin the wheel, who he was with Eve, who spun the match, and we ended up on a no count out match, and this isn't a stipulation which really adds anything to a match, and this one was no exception. In fact, the only time they went outside the ring was a spot where they were both outside the ring, they stared each other down and raced back into the ring, which they could have done within the confines of a 10 count anyway. It was a slightly disappointing match considering the two competitors. I admit I was quite looking forward to this match. It was quite slow and sluggish in parts. There was really annoying Power Ranger chant directed towards Sin Cara about halfway through the match. But Sin Cara did go out the win with a variation of his La Mystica submission that turned into a sort of DDT. I'm not sure if this was intentional or whether either Bourne or Cara took the move wrong, but Cara won by pinfall. As I said, it was a slightly disappointing match due to the expectations that I and probably many others had for it. Anyway, then we had Kofi Kingston backstage to spin the wheel for his match with Dolph Ziggler. Vicky Guerrero spun it and it landed on player's choice, and since the spin was supposed to be Kingston's, he got the choice. And he chose to have Vicky Guerrero banned from ringside, which again was another stipulation which was supposed to come through last week but didn't because of the crashing of the servers for the Power of the People Raw. Just before that match then, we were shown the competitors for the Raw Money in the Bank ladder match. It's Kofi Kingston, Rey Mysterio, Evan Bourne, Alberto Del Rio, R-Truth, Jack Swagger, Alex Riley and The Miz. Which is quite fair choices, actually. Should be quite a good match. Money in the Bank always delivers in some way. Then we did go into Kingston versus Ziggler. It was a typical match between these two. You know, as you've seen this match, you've seen it 1,000 times. And with the amount of times that WWE has booked these two over the last years in matches together, it seems like we have indeed seen them in 1,000 matches together. Kofi Kingston, it was a match that didn't really have anything of note. So just tell you what happened at the end. Kofi Kingston won with Trouble in Paradise. This was a non-title match. Of course, Dolph Ziggler is the US champion. He won it off Kofi Kingston. So it looks like, unfortunately, we're probably going to have at least one more match with these two. I hope Kofi Kingston doesn't win, because then Dolph Ziggler probably won a rematch. I don't want 1,003 times to watch this match. Booker T was with Maurice backstage then. Del Rio came they were talking and Del Rio appeared and he asked Maurice to spin the wheel for his match with Big Show. They were flirting throughout this segment and it seemed to be going somewhere until Del Rio looked up and the wheel had landed on Steel Cage, and which was he was obviously rather angry at, and he walked off. Obviously this match was next. It was a rather short match. Like, this entire feud has just really served to set up Big Show's next feud with Mark Henry. It hasn't really been a feud between these two since the only thing really that hasn't involved Mark Henry was Big Show being run over. But anyway, Big Show dominated most of the match. Mark Henry made his way to ringside, and after a superplex from Big Show to Del Rio, he broke the cage door off and made his way into the ring. Or into the cage, rather. Del Rio escaped through the open door, which Mark Henry had broken off. Del Rio won the match, and afterwards Mark Henry ran into Big Show with the cage door and actually managed to push him through the cage wall, which actually went up quite well with the fans. Mark Henry continues obviously unscripted trash talking, which he started last week in his arm wrestling match with Kane. Last week we had "I don't drink no Kool-Aid," and this week we had "If I charge for it, you keep your bill paid," which is you know, some really good trash talking there, Mark Henry. I seriously applaud you there. That's some great stuff. But even after how much, well, probably in spite of the fact that Mark Henry has been shown to be so dominant in this feud, I don't see him being the victor at the end of the feud. Anyway, Kelly Kelly came up next. Kelly Kelly, of course, I don't know if you know this, but she was at the centre of some very controversial comments by Randy Orton in a radio interview he did where he referred to her sleeping habits. Randy Orton has since been forced to apologise for these comments. But anyway, on to this actual match. Her opponent was, I can't really tell the Bella Twins apart. They don't really do anything for me at all. I don't find them interesting characters. I know Matthew is somewhat of a fan of them, I guess if you could call him a fan of any WWE divas at the moment. But her opponent was the Bella Twin, which she didn't beat for the title. It was announced at a rematch for Money in the Bank pay-per-view against the Bella Twin she did defeat was coming up. There were some confusions as Justin Roberts announced there as a title match, whereas Michael Cole repeatedly said that it was a non-title match. And, you know, there's a Power Slam movie. I know it's a magazine that Matthew makes mention to a lot. But Power Slam, a magazine here in the UK, always talks about how TNA always gets things like this messed up. And it certainly was the sort of thing you don't expect from WWE, but you don't expect them to be that disorganized. Anyway, the wheel spin resulted in a submission match, which was really laughable, because surely a submission match should be kept for wrestlers who actually have some sort of, I know, some sort of submission background. Certainly I wouldn't have put submissions and divas together. Anyway, it was a really short match. It was ridiculously short. It was a ridiculous type of match. But she won it with a Boston Crab, which was more like a Walls of Jericho. And then afterwards, both Bella Twins beat down on Kelly until Eve made the save. There was more footage of the Tough Enough winner, Andy, being announced, and a video package on him and his family and his opportunities and everything such as that. But whenever I see these things with this big Andy guy, I always think, surely him making actual appearances, whether it's like in backstage interviews or, you know, even having a match, would surely be more valuable than anything that these video packages are doing for him, because I'm more than sure that people are not taking a great deal of notice in this, especially if they didn't watch Tough Enough. You have to wonder when Andy's actually going to make his WWE debut and what type of debut was going to be. Anyway, Rey Mysterio was with Booker T to spin the wheel for his next match. The result was a Tornado, which obviously meant a Tornado tag team match. It's going to be Rey Mysterio and Alex Riley versus Jack Swagger and The Miz. After Rey Mysterio walked off, DDP, Diamond Dallas Page, then appeared to plug the Best of Nitro DVD that he presents. Drew McIntyre interrupted to say that there are some who were calling Booker T and DDP some washed up relics, and said he didn't agree with that, but they were taking up his TV time, and he suggested that they would leave. He turned around and ate some switching music. I'm sorry, I had to say ate some switching music. HBK then kind of mocked WCW, saying that he never saw anything that was on the DVD and he must have been working that night, but he sure is very excited. And, you know, that was a total burial of WCW. I know that Vince isn't a massive WCW fan, and he's only producing DVDs like this because he sees the money in them, but, you know, come on, that's a DVD. You're trying to promote this, just come out, surely. But, hey, at least they were burying something from the past rather than the future, as Shawn Michaels often does and WWE often does. The Tornado Tag Team match was up next, and it was, I've got to say, it was a really, really good match. There were some really good exchanges, such as, try and keep up with me on this one, this doesn't even really make sense as I'm reading it, but there was exchanges such as one superstar running into a blindside of attack from the superstar that they weren't attacking, if you see what I mean. But there were some really good exchanges like that. There was a really painful looking gorilla press gutbuster combination from Jack Swagger and The Miz on Rey Mysterio. The end of the match was particularly exciting. I'll try and run you through it here. It came when Jack Swagger gut wrench was reversed into a Hurricanrana into the middle of the rope for a 619 attempt. Jack Swagger caught this and put Rey Mysterio into an ankle lock. And Miz put a headlock on the other side as well. Alex Riley attacked the Miz, who ran at him and got a face drop onto the barricade for troubles. Rey Mysterio finally hit the 619. Alex Riley hit a DDT. And finally, there was a splash from Rey Mysterio off the top rope onto Jack Swagger for the win. And really, it was. I really enjoyed this match. I know Matthew did as well. And, you know, and that would have been a major, something really good to take away from Raw, even if we didn't have Raman at the end of the show. Anyway, R-Truth came back to, was backstage to spin the wheel for his match. It was some more of his really, really excellent, unhinged conspiracy theorist work. Like, I know, like, people have always said that maybe R-Truth isn't so deserving of this spot he's on, but he's done some really good work and he's really deserving over the past few weeks. Anyway, he got a tables match out of it. The match itself, I'm not going to dwell too much on it. It was rather short. It was rather uneventful. You know, I guess you could say it was your typical Cena match, even though it involved tables. CM Punk came up towards the end of the match and distracted and pulled away John Cena's table so that when he performed the Attitude Adjustment on R-Truth, he didn't go through it. CM Punk and John Cena then had a little bit of a brawl. John Cena went for the Attitude Adjustment on Punk, who stood out of the way for R-Truth to spear John Cena through a table, and R-Truth won. And the main reason I ran into this match was to get to what happened at the end of it. It's fast becoming known as the Punk promo. You know something's big when it's fast becoming referred to as his own title, even when it wasn't originally given one. Some have begun calling it the Austin 316 of our age. And I'm inclined to agree with that, and that's not just because I'm a huge CM Punk fan. I honestly do believe that this could be one of the biggest things in wrestling in a very long time. The promo began with CM Punk talking about John Cena, saying he didn't hate John Cena, and he actually liked John Cena a lot more than some of the others in the back. He just hated this idea that he was the best, when the only thing he was the best at was kicking Vince... Kissing Vince McMahon's ass. Just like... Hulk Hogan and Dwayne. Yeah, Punk said he'd been the best since day one, despite being vilified for being a Paul Heyman guy, just like Brock Lesnar, who split too. But CM Punk said the difference was he was going to be splitting with the WWE Championship. I'll say this for you as well before I go on with this brief transcript, that he really placed emphasis on the word wrestler when he said it, just like a couple of weeks ago when he seemed to mock the term sports entertainment. And last week he referred to the WWE as World Wrestling Entertainment, when these are all, you know, buzzwords that Vince McMahon has said shouldn't be used to describe the WWE anymore. Anyway, Punk then voiced his complaints over grabbing so many of Vince's imaginary brass rings before he realised that he was the only real thing in the WWE, and he was the best wrestler, he was the best on the mic, and he's even the best commentator, and no one could touch him. He made mention how he's never on Collector Cups or on the show programs, even though he should be. And he said the fact that Dwayne was in the WrestleMania 28 main event and he wasn't made him sick. He also went on a little aside where he said that those who cheer for him were just another part of him leaving, because they still wanted him to sign the Collector Cups and programs where he wasn't on at 5 a.m. in the morning in airport so they can make some quick money. Punk also said that he was leaving with the championship and he might go and defend it in New Japan Pro Wrestling or even go back to Ring of Honor. He then mentioned Colt Cabana. Another quick aside here, Colt Cabana is, for those who don't watch independent wrestling, he's a good friend of CM Punk. He worked in Ring of Honor with him. He's also a prominent independent worker. He's a former NWA World Heavyweight Champion. He was in WWE for a short amount of time a few years ago with Scotty Goldman. CM Punk and Colt Cabana are very close. CM Punk has worn Colt Cabana's t-shirt before when he was commentating, and it was obvious that CM Punk was just doing his little bit to get his friend over a bit more, because Colt Cabana even became a worldwide trending topic on Twitter after his mention, even though Paul Heyman and Brock Lesnar did not. Punk said his real reason for leaving was the people who will still pour money into this company even after he's gone. He said that Vince should be a billionaire, and he's just a millionaire, and he should be a billionaire. And the reason he's not is because he surrounds himself with douchebag yes men. Those are Punk's words, such as John Laurinaitis, who I'm not going to pretend to be an insider or a man who's got inside knowledge of WWE, but I have read a lot of comments and interviews basically with a lot of negativity directed towards John Laurinaitis. Punk said he would like to think that the WWE would be better when Vince dies, but it won't, due to his idiotic daughter, Stephanie McMahon, and stupid son-in-law, Triple H, taking over. Punk was then cut off as he offered to tell a personal story about Vince, and Raw even went off the air. I don't know, it was quite... This promo was... I really can't stress how excellent this promo was. I really enjoyed it. It had me gobsmacked. It was reminiscent of Austin 316, as I said. A bit of old-school ECW in there. A bit of Brian Pillman. And, you know, it's becoming more and more obvious that it's a bit of a work shoot. But it was intense. It was dramatic. I really just can't find the right word to describe it. It was that good. I can't recommend you watch it enough. HeymanHustle.com, which is Paul Heyman's website, has a complete transcript of the promo if you want to read it, but I strongly suggest that you go on WWE.com or YouTube and watch the promo in its entirety, just so you can really see how good it actually was. Just another quick note here, CM Punk was apparently suspended immediately after Raw went off the air. But yeah, as I said, I really suggest that you check out that transcript or you check out the actual video, as I can't do it justice myself. That's why I haven't recapped it all. Anyway, then moving straight on to SmackDown then, which obviously had something quite special to follow. At this point, I will just mention that I had to arrange the show rather last minute. I watched Raw, as I always do. I'm not a big SmackDown watcher. I watch it quite often, but I'm not as regular as I am with Raw. But Matthew asked me yesterday to do this show, so I found it a bit difficult getting a hold of a copy of SmackDown in any way, shape or form to watch it. So unfortunately I'm having to rely on what I could find on YouTube and on other wrestling websites just to give you a recap. So my recap for SmackDown is going to be a bit brief, but I hope it's going to do the job. It opened with a Mark Henry video package and the announcement that he would face Randy Orton tonight. Then the show opened with Christian in Teddy Long's office asking for another match since he won the tag team match last night, as Teddy Long said he had to. Teddy Long said Mark Henry was the one who got the pinfall, so he's the one that gets the match with Orton tonight, and that match will be what decides the title match at Money in the Bank. He also said that Christian is banned from ringside and there'd be serious repercussions if he got himself involved with this match. Surprisingly, Randy Orton versus Mark Henry was the first match of the night. Mark Henry played up some typical heel big man moves in this match, including a big boot, which is something he hasn't done in a while. The match ended when both went outside the ring and Big Show's music played and a distracted Mark Henry got RKO'd. Randy Orton got back in the ring and won by countout. After the match, an enraged Mark Henry trashed the production desk and even the production manager, throwing him onto the concrete. This resulted in a no-entrance music for Ted DiBiase and Daniel Bryan in their next match. It seemed like a pretty decent match. I'm glad Ted DiBiase is getting something a bit above his usual job status that he's been occupying over the last year. So yeah, it was a pretty decent match. DiBiase didn't lose. He submitted to a guillotine choke, but it was just nice to see him getting a bit of extended TV time. Back in Teddy Long's office then, Christian said that Mark Henry lost, so therefore he must be the number one contender, and says he wants a contract signing. Teddy Long mentioned that Christian was seen walking towards the production truck earlier on, but he said that there will be a contract signing later in the evening. In fact, he said in an hour. First though, Christian has a match with Sin Cara. Cody Rhodes then voiced his disappointment with Ted DiBiase, saying that it's been exactly 1 year since Ted DiBiase last won a match, and that might be an over-exaggeration, but it's not entirely unbelievable. And said that he should be wearing a paper bag himself if he can't beat someone like Daniel Bryan. Could this be the face turn, I'm wondering, for Ted DiBiase that we were all almost promised around WrestleMania 26 time? I don't know, it'd be nice to see if he did. I think Cody Rhodes, with all the work he's done for himself over the past year, could be the ideal opponent to get DiBiase over. There was then a pre-taped interview with Ranjan Singh saying that Jinder Mahal is the best. Sorry, I couldn't even read my own writing then. Saying Jinder Mahal is the brother-in-law of the great Kali and obviously Ranjan Singh. He says that Mahal's family is rich compared to Singh's very poor family, and that Jinder Mahal marry the Great Khali's sister to help their family out with money. And apparently the reason that Jinder Mahal has this control over the Great Khali is because he threatens him with divorcing his sister if Khali doesn't obey him. And Ranjan Singh finished his promo off, this interview off, basically by saying that people really need to fear Mahal. Then the SmackDown Money in the Bank participants were announced. It was Kane, Sin Cara, Daniel Bryan, Wade Barrett, Cody Rhodes, Justin Gabriel, Heath Slater and Sheamus. I don't know, I think I'm leaning towards the Raw Money in the Bank ladder match to be a better one this time, but I'm really looking forward to this pay-per-view. Christian vs Sin Cara was up next. It was a very good match from what I've seen and heard. It was a decently, it was a match that was quite decent in length. Nicely paced as well. Cara seemed very much Christian's equal. He had some good reversals for him, and he showed off some of his Lucha Libre past a lot more than he's done in the in previous matches, I think. We had another version of La Mystica. We had Pele kicks, which is not just it's not just a Lucha move, it's a move that AJ Styles uses a lot in TNA. Cara also used a corkscrew plancha, and there were several other things in this match that he used. But the end came when Sin Cara fought out of the kill switch, climbed the ropes, but was taken down and speared. Christian got the pinfall, and this was Sin Cara's first loss in the WWE. It's not really something they built up upon. I did make a quick mention of it on Raw when he was facing Evan Bourne. But yeah, I'm just glad he's doing so well. He's perfected his entrance, which is one thing that was working against him. And I'm just glad he seems to be going places in WWE. There was then footage of Ezekiel Jackson winning the Intercontinental Championship at Capital Punishment 2 weeks ago. His match was against Cody Rhodes. Cody Rhodes' assistants gave a paper bag to Booker T, who crumpled it up angrily. Apparently Cody Rhodes thinks Booker T has a very unjust and lying face. It was a short match. Just honestly, I don't really expect all that much from Ezekiel Jackson. He only hit the one body slam in this match before Ted DiBiase distracted him. DiBiase himself was hit off the apron, only for Ezekiel Jackson to turn around to get hit with the Beautiful Disaster on the Crossroads to be pinned by Rhodes. Rhodes, after the match, thanked DiBiase and said he did the right thing, but DiBiase did look a little bit disgruntled. Again, another sign for a possible face turn. We had another bizarre Johnny Curtis promo. I won't go into in depth with these because they're getting worse and worse by the week, and it's just, you know, pointing towards a burial. Johnny Curtis does seem to be doing the best he can with them, but I don't really see a bright future for him. He just said he doesn't want to paint himself into a corner. Moving straight on to the Raw Rebound. It focused on the CM Punk promo. Afterwards, Michael Cole said that these comments were really outlining that Punk was justifiably suspended. Effectively, CM Punk has lost his WWE title match, Capital Punishment. Michael Cole said that it seemed that Vince McMahon would be on Raw himself on Monday night. Kane vs. Wade Barrett was next. Again, I didn't expect much from this. It was your typical Money in the Bank competitor versus competitor match that we always get in the run-up to the Money in the Bank match. Kane won with a chokeslam after avoiding a waistband and a big boot. Then we had the contract signing with Christian and Randy Orton. Christian came up with a bald man who was revealed to be his lawyer and said that there was a clause in the contract saying that he would get an immediate rematch if the referee made another mistake like he did at Capital Punishment. He said he knows he can beat Randy Orton even if no one else does, and says he won't be screwed again, and there's no one and nothing that can protect Randy Orton anymore. Orton said he once enjoyed facing Randy Orton, but now he finds it comical, and it's even starting to make him angry how much Christian wants all these rematches. He basically said that he was going to beat Christian once and for all, and he signed the contract. He handed it over to Christian, whose lawyer checked it out and told Christian he could sign it. Christian's pen wouldn't work, which Christian was quite annoyed at. Sheamus then came out and attacked them both, hit brogue kicks on both men and ripped up their contract and walked off to end the show. So it seems like we might get Triple H. Sorry, Sheamus involved in a triple threat match. See, that's why I said Triple H. I wouldn't say triple threat. Sorry. But yeah, I'm glad Sheamus is getting a push because I quite enjoy watching him. Anyway, that was the week in WWE. Obviously, there is one major talking point. I think there's going to be only one thing that really anybody takes away from this Raw, from this week. And it's, you know, obviously, it's going to be, in my eyes, it's going to be a very memorable segment. You know, people have been crying out for a breakthrough, not just by for CM Punk, but for anyone who isn't Randy Orton, John Cena, Triple H, Undertaker, The Rock, etc., etc. And it looks like we're finally getting it. And, you know, especially myself personally, as I've said, I'm a very big CM Punk fan, and I'm really glad that he seems to be cut on the cusp of such a career-defining angle. And again, really, just go and check that promo any way you can. Apologies once again, though, for the rather rushed-together nature of this show, especially on the SmackDown side of things. Matthew will be back soon. As I said, he's just really busy. He's a student in university, so at the moment it's a very busy time of year for him. He's just finished exams, and he's getting results, and he has to sort of research, and he's applying for his next year and things such as that. So, he's, you know, again, apologies to the regular listeners and to Brady Hicks for him not being here this week. Yeah, if you want confirmation from yourself, or if you just want to follow him in any way possible, you can reach him on facebook.com/MattyFry19 or Chronicles of Fry on Twitter. Of course, he's a writer for the Wrestling Press. I'm sure he told me that he's working on his next article, so they should be up soon. Again, I'm also on Twitter under ECT. If you want to check that out. Otherwise, I hope you enjoyed this week in WWE. I know I certainly did. I hope you enjoyed this week's Wrestling Roundup. I really enjoy doing this whenever Matthew needs. If you're an American listener, I really hope you're enjoying Independence Day. And above all else, I really hope you enjoy the upcoming week in WWE. And either myself or Matthew, or even both, we'll see you next week with another edition of the Wrestling Roundup.